up. This is Movies on Up. Accept your reality or fight for a better one. I couldn't think of a better co-host than the man seated across from me, and that is, of course, Mr. Dave Bisella.
And I am ready, player two.
That's Mr. Dave, the player two to my player one. I am Ryan. We are Movies on Up. Accept your reality or fight for a better one is our tagline for this week. If you think you know what movie that comes from, you can send your guest to us in one of the following ways. You can email it to us, moviesonup@gmail.com. You can leave it on our Facebook page, which is at facebook.com/moviesonup. Or you can tweet your guest to us at @moviesonup on the Twitter if you are correct. And if we choose you, you will win the big prize, which is not quite as valuable as the prize at the end of the movie that Dave's already mentioned, but valuable nonetheless.
It'll be your own oasis in your own special way.
Yeah, something like that. It might actually contain CD from the band Oasis. That's the kind of stuff we send out.
Or a cassette single.
Old technology that these millennials will have no idea what to do with. This week, The Happy Time Murders comes out, starring Melissa McCarthy, Joel McHale.
Puppets,
yeah. Speaking of movies that millennials don't have a clue what to do with, we went back to our childhood. When you think of the murders and puppets, I think it's a very easy segue to go to 1988's Who Framed Roger Rabbit, directed by Robert Zemeckis, starring Bob Hoskins, Christopher Lloyd, and Charles Fleischer. Because you have, instead of puppets this time, you have cartoons. The story, obviously...
less cum.
Slightly. Although, when that
boobs.
Baby goes under the lady's dress, I'm not really sure what happens there. Happy Time Murders is made for adults. There is no two ways about it. Who Framed Roger Rabbit is... there are some adult themes in it, for sure. Some boobs, some murder, but presented in a way that is kid-friendly, I think. In a movie that Dave and I both watched a lot... as we were kids, we weren't the only ones that watched it. It opened to $11 million on June 24th, 1988, which was good for first place in the box office that week. Big, The Great Outdoors, Red Heat, and Crocodile Dundee 2 rounded out the top five for that week. It went on to gross $156.4 million domestically. Not that we mention worldwide very often, but... $329.8 million worldwide.
I saw all five of those movies in the theater, that top five you just listed, but Roger Rabbit's the only one I saw more than once.
Well,
in theaters.
I guess that stands to reason because it was the number one movie. Maybe that's why a good part of that $11 million was your allowance money that week. The $156.4 million domestic earning puts it at 316th place on the all-time domestic list. It is one spot below a 1987 stalker movie, which featured a much worse ending for a rabbit.
Fatal Attraction.
Fatal Attraction, yes. And one spot above one of my favorite con movies from 1973. We'll see how much Dave pays attention when I talk. Starring
Bullet.
Robert Redford and Paul Newman. It's The Sting.
Oh, okay, The Sting.
Yeah.
That was my next guess.
I just beat you right to it. To give you some context where 316th place is, it sits two spots above a 2000 supernatural movie directed by Robert Zemeckis, starring someone who was actually first choice for the role of Eddie Valiant, but cost a little too much, from 2000. Horror movie with Robert Zemeckis and Harrison Ford.
Is it What Lies
What
Beneath?
Lies Beneath,
yeah.
Indeed. And if you look down in 327th place, so about 11 spots below Roger Rabbit, you have what apparently is one of the best movies ever made, Mad Max Fury Road. Did not make as much money as Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Yeah.
Suck it. If you adjust for inflation, which we don't do.
But it's fun to do.
It is fun to do when it makes a point that I agree with. If you adjust for inflation, this movie is in, I believe, the top 200, and it falls right between Suicide Squad and Inception. So I don't think it's a stretch to say that in 1988 dollars, $156 million is a hit. 30 years later, when we go back and watch the movie, I think it's easy to see why. The movie works perfectly as a partially animated kids movie, and it's a really good noir, too.
And it looks good. You know, we talked about Last Starfighter one, where we talk about, like,
yeah.
At the time, like, that looked great, and then now... it doesn't look great, but Who Framed Roger Rabbit still works. It doesn't look bad. Yeah, I mean, they can do a lot better now, but it doesn't look bad. It looks really good, and a lot of that is Hoskins. his interactions with Roger is really good. He committed to it. And you would not guess, if you were an idiot, a dumb idiot, that didn't know that cartoons and people are different, you would think they were standing there right next to each other.
And in some cases they were. Fleischer was, he literally stood in for Roger in a lot of those scenes with Hoskins. And I think one of the things that nowadays, it's almost like these movies or these toon characters would have been CGI. You see that a lot with live characters and CGI characters on the screen at the same time. But obviously the technology wasn't there in 1988, but I think that by actually hand-drawing the cartoons, I think that allowed things to look as good. Because, I mean, it's still a well-drawn cartoon, and nowadays our cartoons are just...
They're just CGI.
They're a different style, so it doesn't look bad, it just looks different.
And I think that's why it works, is because cartoons now try so hard to look like this photorealistic thing, where back then, like, Toon World and in New York were completely different worlds. So they looked it. So you didn't have these.
And New York was far different than Los Angeles, where the movie was.
Hollywood. It wasn't Hollywood.
Yeah, it was.
They felt like two different things. And it's like CGI would feel like, oh, I've seen District 9 or Guardians, where like real characters are CGI, that they're in the same world. These were different. They're from a different world. And it worked. And it still looks great.
A lot of these characters certainly were pulled out of a different world, and that's a noir, which is not something you would associate with a kind of movie that a kid would like.
With Dumbo.
Yeah, exactly.
You expect Dumbo to show up in a film noir murder mystery.
For sure, and this movie really is. I mean, for someone like myself that later on in life would come to like noir a lot, you go back and you look at some of these characters, and you've got the alcoholic, defective detective character. I mean, Eddie certainly is that. He's got a trauma where... You know, we see at the beginning of The Maltese Falcon, Sam Spade loses his partner. Now, we don't actually get to see Eddie's brother get killed, but we see the aftermath of that and why he's maybe not as on top of the ball as he ought to be. You've got a corrupt politician who, in this case, is a judge. And
who's out for justice and will catch the perpetrator at all costs.
Right. Dolores is a great girl Friday. Jessica is basically the poster child for an over-sexualized femme fatale. And Roger's the patsy. The movie's even set in the 1940s, which is when film noir is at its height. So it has all of that working for it. It's also kind of fun to look back and see a 1940s Hollywood.
From the 80s.
Exactly. Yeah. Made in the 80s. People are looking back on that lovingly 40 years, and then now we're 30 years past that. But it is very much... Fish out of water is an idea we're going to come back to, because that's kind of applicable in several areas. But I think that it's not just a good kids movie. It's not just a good noir. They work together, but it almost feels like they shouldn't belong together.
And it's going to be weird. And maybe it's because I grew up with it and I love it. But I don't think I have ever thought of Roger Rabbit as a kids movie. Yes, 100% it is. Like
when you were a kid.
Yeah, it felt bigger to that. It felt like a murder mystery movie, which I loved. And 9-year-old me was into some stuff that, you know.
Murders.
Yeah. But like, even now, like, I don't look at it as a kid's movie because it's good. It's a movie that I can watch, that my kids can watch with me, and that my kids enjoy. I don't feel like the purpose of this was, let's make a good kids movie. I think it was, let's make a good noir movie and let toons be toon. We'll have toon characters, but we'll make them good toon characters, which naturally will lead them down that road to where, hey, they're kid-friendly, kind of.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think now, when we say kids movie, that used to have a bit of a stigma to it, but because of a lot of the things that Disney and Pixar specifically are doing now, there can be good movies that your kids will enjoy, which Roger Rabbit certainly was.
To piggyback off your point that's piggybacking off, like, I guess how I'm trying to word it is, like, the Pixar movies is a perfect example. Those are kids' movies. Those are family movies that are enjoyable enough that they're a nice surprise, that parents can enjoy them. But they are made with kids in mind. Whereas Roger Rabbit, I feel like, was the opposite. I feel like it's a good movie for adults that, like, oh, hey, the kids can watch this with me. Because the toons are there. They just took kids with them. It never felt like a kids movie. I accept that it is, and I know that it is, but I don't feel like they approached it like a kids movie.
Certainly the idea was to bring kids into the theaters. I don't think we would make it far trying to argue that, especially when you look at some of the things that it did that were kind of unique to this movie specifically. Because of the cooperation between Warner Brothers and Disney, you got to have scenes with Daffy and Donald Duck. You got to have Mickey Mouse and Bugs Bunny together. You know, it was also one of the last times Mel Blanc actually was able to voice those characters. He died the next year. And that's just kind of too, for lack of a better word, or, you know, for a current nomenclature, two cinematic universes coming together. And, you know, as a kid, that was really fucking cool.
I think the way to sum it up, you go to Up or you go to Brave or you go to Coco and you know, like, oh, this is for my kids. But there's going to be something here and there that I'm going to enjoy. I feel like Roger Rabbit starts off perfectly because it starts off like that classic cartoon. It is just a cartoon of Baby Louie and Roger Rabbit. And the kids are into it. And then immediately after, you have the yelling director. You have Baby Louie looking up the dress. And I think that's what the part when it, that's kind of it telegraphing to parents, like, hey, this is for you. Instead of like, it's for them and there might be some stuff you enjoy. I think that like exchange there with Louie storming off the set is just kind of Zemeckis' way of saying, like, this is for you. There's going to be some stuff that they like along the way, though, instead of the other way around.
That opening cartoon is fantastic.
It's perfect.
I think it does really kind of set you up for... There's not a many better introductions to characters. One of the best ones I always talk about is Raiders of the Lost Ark. Like, that opening gambit, really, that's who Indiana Jones is. You see Roger Rabbit, that's kind of who he is. And we know... basically everything we need to know about him outside of the Jessica stuff, we see that right at the beginning. If you're a kid, I think you're hooked instantly. If you're an adult, maybe you're sitting through that going, yeah, okay, I see what kind of movie this is going to be. But, you know, adults have longer than a five-minute attention span. You got more than 5 minutes to hook an adult. It certainly doesn't take long as soon as we hear cut.
Yeah.
Then you do get, I mean...
I said stars, and you're seeing birds. What are these?
Like, yeah, you've shown that this movie is going to bring those two universes together and do it in such a way that it's going to be seamless. They seamlessly go from the kind of cartoon you would see before Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. I think there was a Roger Rabbit cartoon in front of that, theatrically, to this kind of movie that's going to be something more than that, I suppose. And I think one of the things that does allow this movie to be not just a cartoon is the human cast. And I want to start specifically with Bob Hoskins. He does a great job of playing second fiddle to a cartoon. He's just mean enough to be that anti-hero, kind of. But never for a second as a kid do you think that Eddie's not actually going to help out Roger. And I think while he does integrate well into the slapsticky plot, he's able to maintain that fish out of water. If someone like Jim Carrey, and I do like Jim Carrey, were to take this role, you could see him making Eddie a cartoon character.
Yeah.
Almost like he's a human that belongs in that world. But like, Hoskins kept the line.
And that's where it's so big. His casting is so big. Because at this time, this could be a Rodney Dangerfield movie or even a Bobcat Goldthwait movie.
Like Robin Williams.
Yeah, actors like that could be in there and you know what you're going to get. With Bob Hoskins, you don't. The Weasels thing is one of my favorite scenes of any movie ever. Like, I love the Weasels at the end because you earned that. Whereas, okay, if I see Jim Carrey dancing or if I see a comic actor do that, like, I've been waiting for that. Mm-hmm. You don't expect it from Hoskins. Back to my point. He didn't go into this thinking like, oh, I'm going to make a kid's movie. He approached this as, I'm a drunk detective who lost his brother and I'm angry at everything. I used to be close to Toons. Now I hate him because one killed my brother. And he took that approach and he didn't scale it back at all. He didn't tone it down notches. And Bob Hoskins has always had this intensity. Like, he's always had this... just this stare that he has that he didn't dial back at all, even though he was in like a quote unquote kids movie. And that worked. And that made Valiant such a good character and made the turn at the end with to get the weasels to die laughing. Like, that works then. And
But even when he's doing it, like, you can tell this is not something Eddie's ever done before.
Yeah, because it's bad.
Yes, it was not
It's
good.
Really, really bad. But it's great.
But that's what made it real.
And, like, the whole time watching this, Bob Hoskins makes the movie. Like, he's so good in this. And I'm thinking, like, who now? Like, if we were to make this movie now, I had the hardest time, like, coming up with, like, somebody I could think that could do what Hoskins did. Because, like, somebody like Galifianakis comes to mind, but you expect him to be funny. I was thinking more because he's a naturally trained actor, so like he could do the acting part, but you still expect the funny.
It's hard now because I think people are more multifaceted, but
yeah.
Somebody like J.K. Simmons, I think, could do it,
yeah.
But I wouldn't also be surprised at his comedic chops.
Yeah. J.K. Simmons would be good. Even like a Richard Jenkins, maybe, then.
Yeah.
But I had an easier time recasting Christopher Lloyd, who I think was awesome as well.
That's the thing, like Christopher Lloyd too, where I said that Hoskins did a great job of kind of holding that line. He was a human character, and he wasn't going to be too cartoony. He wasn't going to be a human cartoon. Lloyd, on the other hand, did go into that toon element because he was a toon, and I think that's what made him such a great villain. Pure evil. You know, you got the voice. He refused to blink on camera just to really drive home the fact that there was something unsettling about the guy. He really, really created this character that was larger than life and fits in wonderfully to a movie where the characters themselves are larger than life. His casting, I think, was spot on at the time. And I couldn't think of somebody that would have been a better choice, to be honest.
At that time, no. Especially coming off of, you know, he was huge at that time because of Doc Brown.
Right.
And so this is his, like, follow-up to Doc Brown. And that's
he's known for being a good guy.
Yeah. And so he's this really evil person who just wants to destroy toons. And then the twist, I think, is great and terrifying. My three-year-old, Kira, she watches horror movies with me, watches zombie movies, watches pretty much anything. She was terrified when he starts getting up after the steamroller thing and talking and him with the saw. She was terrified. And it was so good because he's so good. And he's able to make that turn from like evil, vindictive dude to just evil wacko cartoon.
You could kind of see it there the whole time. I do talk about Robin Williams a lot being, or even Jim Carrey, like being human cartoon. Carrey was great in The Mask, which is basically a human cartoon character. But to be on the flip side of that and to be an evil cartoon, and evil in a way that you don't really see in a kid's cartoon. Maybe, like, if you're watching Tom and Jerry, okay, maybe one of them you identify with more than the other. Or even, like, Wile E. Coyote, he's always trying to eat the Roadrunner. But it's not necessarily evil. But, Jesus, when he dips the shoe in the dip at the beginning of the movie, like, this guy's an asshole.
Yeah.
Not only is he scary looking, but
the voice.
Yeah, I mean, he brought so much to that character that, like we said, it's even now trying to think of someone that would do that now.
Michael Shannon, to me.
Yeah, that's a good point.
The whole time I'm thinking,
the like, eyes.
He's the only one that I can think of that has that intensity and that evil in him that you see as the evil guy, but he's also hilarious when he wants to be, so I could see him, and he commits to everything.
He could scare the shit out of some kids.
So I could see him turning into a cartoon. So I guess Who Framed Roger Rabbit remake is J.K. Simmons and
Michael Shannon. That's not bad. You could seriously do worse than that. We talked about some people that could be in a remake, but we don't get into a ton of alternate casting things because at the end of the day, it really just doesn't matter because none of those people were cast. But I do like to think about, specifically, I think the Hoskins one is fantastic because he did so well. And some of these guys that were thought of for this role, much, 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 much bigger names, but I don't think any of them would have been right. I mean, I mentioned Harrison Ford already. He obviously had a relationship with
Zemeckis
and Spielberg specifically.
And he's coming off a Witness right around this time, so he had that darkness to him.
Yeah, he wanted too much money. They offered the role to Bill Murray, but because he's got that answering machine thing where you just have to leave a message and you don't know,
yeah.
He never really got it. Eddie Murphy turned it down, which he said he really regretted that later. Chevy Chase, still, I think, is a little too goofy. Robert Redford would have been fascinating.
That'd be interesting.
Yeah. Jack Nicholson at the time maybe would have been more interesting, but after having seen him play the Joker, like,
Which was a year later.
Yeah.
Like, so, I mean, it still got that.
Yeah, but I think he may be a little too cartoony. Sylvester Stallone, I don't see that. Wallace Shawn, I like him.
I could see that, but I could see him in Lloyd's role more.
Exactly, yeah. And maybe that's just me assigning bad guy.
Or I could even see him as Roger Moore.
Yeah, that's true, too. Ed Harris, maybe.
I could see Ed Harris. Even now, Ed Harris.
Yes.
Ed Harris now could do it.
I could see that. The other two names I saw were Charles Grodin and Don Lane.
Charles Grodin makes sense, because at that time.
Exactly. At that time, after that, it doesn't really have legs. Obviously, some of those I think were better choices than others. Some of them didn't have necessarily the name then that they do now. I mean, Ed Harris, I think, is certainly a bigger star now than he was in the late 80s, but you'll never know. But I really can't see any of those guys
some
being
those
better than Hoskins.
Not better than Hoskins.
Exactly.
He
I think they got the
it.
Right guy.
Yeah, they did. And for Roger, I know Paul Rubens was in the mix there for a bit. And I think there's actually recordings of, I think it was Paul Rubens who released recordings of him doing Roger voice. And I could see that.
Yeah, for sure. There were a couple other guys that they had circled for Judge Doom. And the first one, they actually auditioned Tim Curry.
I could see that.
But they thought he was entirely too frightening.
Yeah.
And if you can imagine the guy that gave you Pennywise.
Pennywise, yeah.
Yeah, I could absolutely see that. But they didn't go far. They just went to his Clue castmate and they got the right guy. But some of the other names, Christopher Lee turned it down. And I love Christopher Lee. But I don't see that kind of charisma from him. I don't think that would have been good. John Cleese, absolutely cartoony enough. Maybe not menacing enough. Roddy McDowell, I don't see Roddy McDowell. Malcolm McDowell, maybe. But I don't see Roddy. Eddie Deason and Sting were the other ones. I don't see Sting, but David Bowie, maybe.
Yeah,
if you want to go musician.
I can even see Sting more as Valiant.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah. Outside of Tim Curry, which... At the time, you couldn't have found a better person to do a role like that. And had this not been a kids movie, then yeah, I think Tim Curry probably gets the job and he's phenomenal with it.
Because you know what Tim Curry made me think of is like, I was dead set on Michael Shannon, but even like Will Poulter is that. Like I could see, like Tim Curry kind of made me think of him. And it's like, I could see it, but I think he might be too scary.
Will Poulter might be a little too young.
That's the main thing, but like... He could do it, but I think he'd be terrifying.
Michael Shannon might be able to dial it back. Not that Tim Curry doesn't have comedic ability, but yeah, maybe just his headspace where he was at that point was just really trying to scare the shit out of kids. And good for you. If they ever do a reboot between Simmons and Shannon, I think we're off to a good start there. But I mean, they have been talking movies like this that are successful. You almost can't help but have to discuss, at the very least, a sequel or a prequel. Early on, J.J. Abrams was going to write, I believe it was supposed to be a prequel. I believe it involved Roger Rabbit joining the U.S. military and going into Nazi Europe to rescue his would-be wife. And Spielberg's like, nah, I made Schindler's List. I'm not really going to make a movie with those kind of Nazis. So it's kind of been all over the place. But you know, after 30 years, I think we're kind of facing an uphill battle to get any more Roger Rabbits. And I think a lot of that has to do with Spielberg being more involved with DreamWorks now. And I don't think this is the kind of movie that Disney really wants to do right now.
I would love a Valiant and Valiant series, like a show. 10-episode noir that's Valiant and Valiant. In this world where it's half Toon, half, because they did a lot of Toon. They were the Toon private detectives.
Well, you see the newspaper clippings and Roger tells him that's why he went to see him. Cause everybody
I would
knows.
Love that. That's one of those. I would love that show. It wouldn't have to be Roger Rabbit. Like that's where it would hurt is like, he doesn't really fit in there. Jessica Rabbit doesn't really fit in there, but Valiant and Valiant, you could do so much stuff in that world.
The cartoon Gunny has, he got that from Yosemite Sam. I believe that's the inscription on the box when he opens it up. So that would be a cool case to see. But yeah, I think that would be really fun. But realistically, I think that's maybe something like that on Netflix or a streaming service.
Anytime I say a series, I think Netflix or Amazon. Yeah. On, watch it all at once.
Right. Those are, I mean, but I think those are the most realistic places for that to pop up. But to be honest, I don't need a sequel. I don't need to know how Roger met Jessica, because to be honest with you, I just like knowing that they're together and it doesn't matter how. Yeah. That's the joke.
No, I think the reason why, like, it's such a good standalone movie.
Yeah.
Roger is self-explanatory enough. We don't need to see Roger before or even after. The only thing I'd be interested in is Valiant and his brother, because, you know, they're private detectives. Private detectives have cool stories. But for their characters, all these characters had their arcs. They completed them. They were great. I don't necessarily need to see a second one. I'm happy. I love it. But this is one that's 30 years later I can still watch. And it doesn't even, it's one of those that it doesn't feel like I'm watching a 30-year-old movie.
That's the thing, is a lot of times when movies get a reboot, it's because, well, the technology of what we want to do now wasn't there then, and we can really do this movie much better. I don't think you could do it better now. You could do it differently, but I don't think it's better. The movie as is, I think, still is enjoyable. It still does hold up. Other than trying to make a buck, I really can't see what a reason. Yeah.
So you don't want to make it look better. It looks perfect as it is. Like,
yeah, I mean, it would just, unless you're going to hand draw the animation again, it's just going to be CG, and I don't think I need to see that. And, it, you know, to be honest, we see so much of that now anyway that I think it would be, if you did a CG character, it would lose the magic of seeing those two worlds kind of put together, because, you know, we see that in almost every movie
now.
Two
or three 8-episode seasons, and in the season, the series finale of the last season, his brother
dies. Drop the piano on his head.
Yeah.
I think that would be fine. The only thing to really explore in that world, like you said, would be, you know, some of the cases that were referenced, because those could be basically bottle episodes. That I would be interested in. I don't need to see Roger Rabbit fight the Nazis. I'm sorry. I don't need to see how he gets out to Hollywood. I don't care.
Because you know what? And this might be a hot take. I think Roger is the least compelling character in the whole movie. I really do.
Absolutely.
He's there. There's not much.
He's completely one-dimensional.
Yeah, he's like, you know what you're getting with him. Whereas Valiant's really good.
Yeah.
Christopher Lloyd's really good. Doris, or whatever her name is. She's
Dolores.
Like, Dolores, yeah. She's,
Jessica Rabbit is a great character.
Yeah. There's these mysteries and auras about them, and Roger, I just think, is the least interesting of them. So when I think of, like, oh, I want more Roger Rabbit, I want more Roger Rabbit world.
Yes.
I don't need Roger Rabbit in it.
That's sort of the thing. It is simplistic. That's the part that really does appeal to the kids. That's the silly. That's the Jar Jar Binks. You know what I mean? The lowest common denominator. But still, as a kid's character.
That's not to discredit. I love him.
Right.
Ruben Fleischer did great with him. Like,
for what he was asked to do, for what that character was written to be, he nailed it. I mean, everybody did exactly what they needed to do and nailed their characters to a T. But you're right. As far as the continuing adventures of Roger Rabbit, that is the least interesting part of the movie. So if you were to do something, then yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head as a story. But with Teddy and Eddie would be a lot more interesting. And to be honest, it's probably something that people that grew up with Roger Rabbit would want to see now anyway. Well, if you have some ideas on some cases you would like to see Valiant and Valiant tackle in the streaming series that Dave and I are probably going to cut off the mics right now and go ahead and write and get sent out and make a ton of money and quit this show, let us know. We could use probably, what'd you say, like 3 seasons, 8 episodes a piece. Although if it's Netflix, they're going to make us do 12, whether it needs 8 or 4.
I'm a hard 8. 2 seasons, 8 episodes.
Fair enough. Hopefully that'll make us crazy rich. Next week, because of the release of Crazy Rich Asians, we are going to do our 5 favorite movies featuring that cast. So we are going to delve deep into the cast of Crazy Rich Asians and give you our 5 collective from then. And to find out not only what movies we select, but what actors and actresses we select, have to come back and see us next week. But until then,
keep it up.